Why have we seen the time tick over on the doomsday clock?
Well, the first thing I should say is that the doomsday clock aren't the only people who talk about how close we are to midnight. There's quite a community of people who talk about how close are we to Armageddon, and particularly to nuclear Armageddon. And they're, they're simply the latest in a series of voices, which range from former United States Secretary of Defense William Perry, and that also include the former commanders of both United States and Russia's nuclear forces. So it's not like the doomsday clock is some kind of funny bunch of people who are sort of out there and who issue apocalyptic predictions from time to time. There is a growing chorus of concern, and the chorus has been growing for quite some years, as indeed the hands of the doomsday clock have gradually inched forward toward the witching hour. And there is a number of sort of fairly obvious reasons that you can think of. Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump issuing apocalyptic tweets, my button's bigger than yours, etc., obviously doesn't exactly help things. But there are also deeper things in United States nuclear strategy, for example. It looks as if the Trump administration is going to be going with much more dependence on nuclear weapons, much greater emphasis on nuclear weapons. Trump himself has said, if we have them, why can't we use them? So all of this indicates that the probability of nuclear weapons use is much, much greater. Now, the board of the Doomsday Clock, having a bit of history to look back on, will have, in fact, quite consciously looked back to the last time that the hands of the Doomsday Clock were in this position, which was in 1953, when the United States and the Soviet Union first commenced testing H-bombs, and when the United States in particular had active plans to do a preemptive strike against the Soviet Union, which most certainly would have initiated Armageddon. Now, they also say that they don't respond to specific incidents, but that they do respond to long-term elevated threat levels. So they didn't respond to the 10 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962, but what we have had is a long-term elevated threat level, which is quite frightening. And if, like myself, you have your head deep in this stuff, then you may not sleep so well at night.
Well, John, I mean, I know in the past we have discussed this, and obviously, when we talk about nuclear disarmament, the words on everybody's lips, the words on everybody's lips lately has been North Korea, the concerns around North Korea having their hands on nuclear weapons. But you have been quite critical of the fact that nobody really discusses the nuclear weapons that are still being held onto by the United States, by Russia. And as we mentioned there, the last time we saw the clock in this position, it was because of well, you know, the potential for a blow-up between the United States and Russia. Nobody's really talking about taking the nuclear weapons away from them.
Well, indeed so. And, well, of course, there are people, including myself,
yes,
who,
of course,
who do talk about the necessity to take the nuclear weapons away from the big boys. The United States and Russia have got 93% of all the nuclear weapons that there are. And North Korea's got less than 1% of all the nuclear weapons that there are. So, you know, let's keep things in perspective. A US-Russia nuclear confrontation, the probability of which is also higher than it has been for many, many decades, with, again, NATO-Russia mirror-imaged exercises taking place near the Baltic states, for example, even as we speak. There are two parallel nuclear crises happening alongside the North Korean crisis. And in some ways, the North Korean crisis is serving to divert our attention from them. There is a US/NATO-Russia nuclear confrontation, which is bubbling just underneath the surface, but which about a year or so back was much closer to the surface. And there is also an India-Pakistan nuclear confrontation. And you can get a lot of these by just Google India-Pakistan nuclear weapons, and you will see that the Indian and Pakistani governments are busy making a series of nuclear threats against each other. So North Korea is, in a sense, the tip of the tip of the iceberg, and it's a big, dirty iceberg underneath there. There is a lot of nuclear risk out there. And of course, there is also always the possibility that a US-North Korea confrontation could bring in Russia or China or both. And of course, any of those bigger confrontations very quickly morph into the end of civilization.
So, John, if we don't want to be watching the clock, so to speak, if we want to see this sort of situation de-escalate, what moves do you feel governments should be taking, the Australian government should be taking?
The Australian government should do two or three things. One, it should announce that it is doing a complete UE on its policy toward the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, and should sign, ratify, and encourage others to sign and ratify that treaty. Two, it should immediately announce its support and that it will be giving high-level representation to the high-level conference on nuclear disarmament that is taking place in New York in late May. And three, it should announce a series of policies aimed at encouraging particularly the big guys, in particular the United States and Russia, but also China, to engage in measures to reduce the risk of an accidental apocalypse. And a lot of these measures are not particularly controversial. They include better military-to-military talks, better military-to-military communication. They include lowering the alert status of nuclear weapon systems, which can be done unilaterally, and they include declarations of no first use. So all of these things would be things that would contribute significantly and meaningfully to making the world a safer place.
John, thank you very much. Really do appreciate you joining us this morning, obviously giving us a little bit of insight into this one.
No worries. Thank you very much.